I'm Lewis Ludlow, and you're listening to Cherry Jam.
Hello, and welcome to a very special Cherry Jam podcast. A bit of a bonus episode for this week. Myself, Ed Price, and Jim Harley joined this week by none other than Gloucester captain Lewis Ludlow. Lewis, we kind of wanted to get you on at some point during the season anyway. I'll be honest, probably would have preferred under better circumstances for everyone concerned. Yeah. but thank you very much for joining us. It's really appreciated. And thank you very much for offering to come on. We weren't reaching out for that purpose, but thank you very much.
No problem. And like I said, just said to you guys then, I probably should start by apologising for twittering on emotion, which is not good for anyone to do post-match. So I'll make sure I get that in there early, because I didn't mean it in that way at all. As you guys know, I've met you guys before, and it wasn't meant like that.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, you apologised on Twitter, and we know, you know, at the same time, there's a lot of emotion after a game generally, and there'll be a lot of emotion after a game like that. And you can, you know, in the same way, there's a lot of emotion that we got thrown.
Agreed.
As well. So it's been a fun weekend. How was the rest of your weekend, by the way? Just sort of out of interest.
Yeah. Sunday was pretty tough. It was, you know, you spend a lot of time reflecting. You spend a lot of time talking to players, especially players that weren't involved, obviously wanting to know what happened, what went on. And then you're trying to have debriefs with a couple of the coaches to see their thoughts. And more importantly for this week, is more about how do we best attack the next 2 weeks. You know, how we go about getting the squad in the right spot. And I suppose that's what part of last week was about, was getting the squad in the right spot for what is a huge 12 days for the club.
Agreed. And do you generally have a sort of standard way you would unwind? So, and how much would that differ for when there's a win or a loss?
It probably doesn't differ too much. Probably spend a bit more time on my own, or being a bit angrier when we lose. But for me, I've got a bit of land at home, so I tend to try and get out there or start doing stuff with cars as my sort of switch off. But yesterday I got up and moved a couple of 100 breeze blocks just to try and get the head around it, sort of get head down and do some graft and get around it that way.
If it makes you feel better, I think our general way of dealing with certainly defeats as supporters, well, us lot anyway, is the pod, because it's very cathartic, as you can imagine.
I could imagine, talking about it is always a good option.
It is always a good option. And then the winning generally involves drinking a few beers.
Do that as well, so that always helps.
I'll get the really kind of tough one out of the way to start off with. I don't want to go into too much detail about the game itself, because look, it happened. Yep. You're going to do the review. You're going to do your own bits and pieces around that. But the big stat, the stat that kind of gets repeated quite a lot at the moment, is we've won 7 league games in the last 32. I think 11 in 37, the BBC quoted as well.
Yeah.
3 home league games since January 2023. And then you compare that to 14 consecutive wins in the Cup. Are the players and coaches, are you getting clear on what the root cause of that is? Or is it still kind of a bit of an unknown at this point?
No, I think there is definitely, you know, it's obviously a tricky question and a tricky thing to put your finger on, because if anyone could do that, then the problems would be solved overnight. But there's a lot of factors that go into it, and I will forever defend coaches and players in terms of the effort that goes in. That's probably one of my biggest things about when I read stuff, and I'm quite lucky that I don't get affected too much by what I read, but some players definitely do. And it comes down to, it's never ever a lack of effort. And that's proved even in the markers this week, like running meters, collisions, all these sort of stuff, effort markers are through the roof. I'd say a lot of the problems, from my opinion, in the Premiership come down to things like player availability. You are working within a constraint of a salary cap, and how you make up a squad and stuff like that is all, you know, that's how you decide to do it at the start of a year. And we've proven that. You know, for example, I think there's a stat around Hastow. When Hastow's fit, for example, we were 5th in the league when we finished. You know, we spent a large part of this season without Zach, Ruin, Val, Hastow, just to name a few. You know, we've gone for loads, and even at the moment, you know, you've got Cam and Matty injured in the second row. young lads stepping up. There's a lot to do with injury and player availability, and that's just becoming harder and harder with how tough the squad is, you know, the salary cap is in the league. Another thing is the league being down to 10 teams. Everything has been sort of narrowed down to how good players are, and games are very, very good. You look at even someone like Sarries, for example, they're getting beaten 1 week by 50 points, and then they're putting 50 points on someone the next week. It's especially the run of 9 league games we lost this year, which was a huge, obviously, defining factor of our season. We're losing a lot of those games by less than one score, missing 4, 5, 6 players. If you change 2 or 3 of them around, all of a sudden you're 4th in the table, 5th in the table, momentum's building. And we just never really got to that stage of momentum building, unfortunately, which is something we definitely have to rectify. And we will work to rectify that. And I think the biggest thing I would say, and you know, I know you guys might not believe me or whatever, but it's this coaching group is the most diligent, most accurate, most intelligent coaching group we've ever had at Gloucester. And players who have played for the Lions, have played for their country, have played for other Premiership clubs, all agree. And very often we're put on the pitch with a very, very good plan. It just comes down to executing. And that even that stuff at the weekend, like there's so many things at the weekend that we had spoken about in the week and didn't execute. And that's down to us as players to own. And that's something that especially younger players coming in have got to get better at, is executing a coach's plan. Because more often than not, these guys spend 2 to 3 weeks reviewing a game coming up. They're so far ahead of us in terms of their schedule. It's down to, and it's a big learning curve for younger players, is you have to trust that what the coaches do and back it. And you almost don't want to think too much in a game of rugby unless you're in a position, obviously, where you have to think. But there's a lot that goes into coaches planning and how we work towards the week. And you've got to trust that and implement it. And when we do, Benetton, for example, majority of that game, we implemented a plan that the coaches put in front of us. The one time we didn't was the poor scrum and they scored in the corner.
Yeah.
Where everyone was out of position. The scrum went wrong to start with. Trev was fuming. The backs then get the setup wrong off that try. And that's the only time in that game where we got it properly wrong. And we're punished for it. The difference is in the Premiership, that happens 2, 3, 4 times. Teams punish you 2, 3, 4 times. That's where Europe and the Cups have been slightly different, in my opinion.
Okay. Jim, yeah, take on.
Well, I've got a question that Ed has posted, but actually I think it might be a better one, just to kind of follow on. You mentioned about momentum.
Yeah.
And obviously we've still got fantastic momentum in the Cup.
Yeah.
Is it easy to kind of switch off that momentum lack of in the Premiership? And then just go, right, this is a cup game. And you said about, you know, maybe planning 3 weeks previous. Is it quite easy to get back into cup mode and feel a lot more positive about it and sort of go into that game feeling like you're on a great cup run as opposed to a poor Premiership?
Yeah, it definitely is. We were very honest as a group. Once we knew the Premiership, you know, the sort of challenge was very, very difficult for us to get anywhere. We sort of stood up as a senior player group with the boss and said, right, we're going after these two cups now. And then whether that's consciously or subconsciously, you know, you always want to play well. You always want to build momentum through the Premiership games. But subconsciously, there's definitely players that be thinking, yeah, but like we're worried about the cup, you know, and you can't control that. That's human nature. And even something, it can be, you know, you speak to sports psychiatrists, there's even little things about like you're wearing a different shirt in Europe. So on game day, you walk in, it's a different feel. It's a Friday night. There's French fans about, there's Welsh fans about. It's you reviewing a different team. Like you're coming on a Monday, you're reviewing players or plays that you've never seen before. So you're that little bit extra diligent because you've not seen it. Whereas, you know, you're rocking up in a Premiership game. Most boys have played however many Premiership games, you know what Bristol are going to do, you know what X is going to do. It then makes it, because you know what's coming, and teams are so good at what they do in their individual aspects of the game, it then makes it even more difficult to try and stop it. And they know what you're going to do as well. Whereas a lot of the times in the Cup, it's different players, it's different teams, your stuff is a bit different to what they've ever experienced, and vice versa. So you do get that little bit of extra sort of you know, especially our group this year, the energy around cup weeks has been huge compared to, you know, what is or what was a long slog in the Prem before the Six Nations break.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the shirt, actually. That kind of reminds me of the Navy away shirt that we lost the miracle match 2003. Yeah. And I don't know whether it was the team or the you know the coaching setup, but they brought out a new shirt specifically for the repeat fixture the following year. So they didn't wear that same Navy. And yeah. wore a white shirt. Obviously, the result was kind of the same. They still lost.
Yeah, we did
the game,
lose that team. I remember being there, but there we go.
It wasn't. But you know, they were supposed to be wearing this navy blue shirt, and suddenly a white one came out because there was a bit of a feeling they didn't want to be maybe feeling that shirt. And it's quite an interesting one that you say about you know about putting on that cup shirt and feeling a little bit different. So how much input do you certainly as captain, and you mentioned sort of the senior player group, how much input do they have on strategy, but, you know, potentially even kind of selection when it comes to games?
So selection, none. Selection is down to coach. It's not like there's people often say, is it like cricket? Do you get to do this? And no, there is, you know, the selection is down to the boss and the coaches and that's what they do. And you trust that. So, you know, when it's your turn to get a tap on the shoulder for rotation, you get it, you sit yourself out, you have to sort of embrace that. And the plan around, a lot of it's done around medics as well now in S&C, because they have certain markers on players around how many minutes you've played, and post that sort of minutes, how quickly you are to get injured, the likelihood you're going through the roof, whether you're in the sort of red zone, as they call it, of potential injury. And everyone's got different zones for that, and that's obviously because everyone's different.
But do you have a zone? Because you must have played about 300 million minutes.
I don't think I do, no. I seem to always just get the nod of can you go again? And it's like, I would never, ever say no to that. It is the one thing of mine that if it was anyone had to go, I'd rather go. So even when we got to go to Tbilisi, he wanted to rest a few boys there, and I was like, no, that's fine. I can go to there. And we actually had a really good time out there. Although the travel was terrible. But in terms of strategy, yeah, a lot. You have defensive group and attacking group, and what we have is an analyst with each of the coaches. So Dom and Lights will both have like an analyst they work with, tend to watch anywhere between 3 and 10 games of that opposition. And then they'll come to us with certain strategies, and we'll have to, you know, most senior players have looked at it. So defensively, there's 3 or 4 of us. Attacking, there's a bit more because everyone seems to like attacking. But it goes into sort of meetings on a Monday morning, and then they'll sort of go on as the week goes on. Monday, you'll be looking at what a team's, for us as defensive leaders, it's looking what a team's patterns are and notifying what a team does repeatedly, because you know for a fact that's going to come. And then it's also looking at sort of certain players, certain special players teams have, and what they potentially could do. A lot of it's analysing yourself around, like, what would you do if you were attacking us? Because then obviously, you know, you find out your weaknesses, then teams tend to try and attack those. So players do have quite a big input in terms of how we do strategy-wise, yeah.
And there's a common complaint, not just from Gloucester supporters, I might add. I mean, this goes to England, this goes to pretty much every club if you ever talk to a supporter. When things are going wrong on the pitch, everyone often complains about a lack of a plan B.
Yeah.
And we're not immune to saying this, but how is that something that's genuinely achievable, to have a real plan B, or is that just wishful thinking on the behalf of supporters?
It's not wishful thinking, and it's not unachievable. Like, there are definitely games where we've come in at half time and been like, right, that's not working. Like, for example, a few times this year where, you know, we're missing certain players, the maul's not going as well, and we've gone in with a maul heavy focus, and we've had to be like, lads, we can't do this anymore because we're just not getting anywhere. And you've got to go to more of a sort of a launch phase attack. But it tends to be that you practice something so hard in the week, and you talk all week about trusting the plan, that you continually trust it. And a lot of it to do is around like perception with refs, for example. So we know now that sometimes you've got to be 3 or 4 mauls deep into a game. You might only make 2 or 3 meters on each maul, and then you might make 5 meters, and they could turn it over. A team could turn it over. But you, what the ref has seen there is an opposition going back 5 meters. So they think, okay, you know, Gloucester Moor's going pretty well. Same we've had with the scrum this year. Well, Gloucester scrum's on top. That's good. That's good. And then towards the end of the game is when you get your ball try or you get the good perception of a penalty because the refs subconsciously in their head all game seen the Gloucester pack moving forward. In terms of your phases and your launch plays, it's very difficult to have a plan B because you tend to have practiced the 5 or 6 launches for that game specifically for their defence to then go, right, we've got to bring this back in. It relies on the biggest one. It relies on consistency of player in the back line to go, well, we've all done this before, let's do that. If players are injured in or out each week, etc., it's very difficult to then go, right, does everyone remember the one we did last week? Let's try and do that. So that, yeah, that's where, you know, a completely different plan B can sometimes become very difficult to execute.
Yeah. Actually, Jim, just to give you a heads up, I'm going to go to the other question. You can have the match prep one. I'm editing that bit out, Lewis, just so you did it. You know, okay.
Yeah. Oh, just so he looks professional.
Yeah, yeah. So it looks semi-professional. Yeah, so you mentioned about the lack of continuity sometimes with players because of the number of injuries and the way that the workloads have got to be managed.
Yeah.
That in conjunction with clearly the coaches have been pretty open in the last couple of weeks about the fact that we are targeting the final, the league is gone, we're not going to focus on the league. And that's meant some of the younger lads, some of the academy lads who have kind of been on the fringes for the last few weeks have been asked to step up. From your experience, because you've gone through that process yourself, what would the biggest challenges to those lads be? What are the big challenges they're going to be facing as they move from those fringes into maybe a first team environment over the next year or so?
The biggest one is the intensity day in, day out. It's nothing like what you do under 18s, under 20s, school, Hartbury College. You have to be ready to go physically and mentally every day. And that could mean if one day you have a terrible day, you know, you drop 3 or 4 balls, you miss a tackle in training, your head's a bit gone, the next day you've got to do it again and you've got to do it better. And it's being able to mentally control yourself and tell yourself that, right, that's fine. I've got a next job. I've learned that. Trying to do that again. And it's just not making the same mistake 2 or 3 times. But I'd say the hardest thing at the moment is with the younger boys is because of the way squad sizes are since COVID. I was very lucky. When I came into the academy, there's probably 45, 50-man first teams. So you were sent out on loan. You played 20 games. You got yourself a little bit of men's rugby in. And, you know, you felt sort of game prepped. You played your national 2s, 1s, championship, etc. Now it's very difficult for players to go out because of how crucial they are to us as a squad to train and play. You know, your squads are so small now that what would have been a 4th or 5th choice young lad is now 2nd or 3rd choice in some positions. You have to have them in training. And there's no, like, training is training. You can only learn so much in training. It's, you know, it's no different to anything. Match day is the day that you learn properly. You know, that's the one where you're getting judged by a ref. That's the one where you're playing against international players, British Lions, and you look at the weekend, that what you're playing against there is effectively an international team. And some of these boys would have never experienced speed, power, strength, knowledge, execution. You know, that backline's played together probably 20 times this season. They know what they're doing without even saying it to each other. So it's more the mental intensity and boys will get there. It's, you know, I remember my first couple of games and you are a rabbit in the headlights, mate. It is, and that's, you know, that's tough if you're being gripped in ones and twos, let alone if you're having to go as a team. But what it does do is build a huge amount of character. Like, these boys have been, you look at that Sarries game and yesterday, you've been in some dark holes, you've been in some dark places, but the character you've built, the players you've played against, you know, going out there next time that, well, it's not going to be that bad. You know, it's not going to be like that again. So I've played that, you know, you've got lads, they've played Courtney Laws, they've played Tommy Freeman, Ollie Slightham, these boys that are all coming at them, you know, Rob Nixon coming on and making Billy Vinopola run around in circles. It was brilliant to see. It was great to see. And all you want is them to be able to rock up Monday morning and say, yeah, I've learned. I can go again here. I know I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to make that mistake again. But I did this, this, and this well, and that looked good in what is a professional environment. And it's the boys will get there. It's a lot tougher now than when I did it just because of these squad sizes, and everyone's in the same boat there.
No, that seems that's quite interesting. Like, you're kind of concentrating on the mental. Would you say the standard of kind of rugby players in the Premiership is like the skill set and the strength and all that is relatively consistent, but it's the mental strength and kind of that mental ability that really differentiates between some of the top players and those that aren't quite making it?
Definitely. I'd say one thing that has happened in the last sort of 4 or 5 years is I'd say that the talent and the skill in the Premiership has been concentrated, and it's at a level that you've never experienced before. You just look at the league table now at the moment. The fact that there's 8 teams that could be in the top four or 7 teams that could be in the top four with one game to go just shows you that the concentration of talent has gone to these 10 teams. And then, as you say there, it's mentally, it's the ability to, one, learn, and two, adapt to a plan, and then the discipline to stick to it when everything in your mind is telling you to slow down. That's really hard. I can't do that. And everyone's telling you can't do it. Everyone's telling you shouldn't be doing
that. That really hurts.
That really hurts. Why have I done that? And then you have to be able to say, yeah, I'm going to do that again. Not only am I do it again, but I'm going to do it better, and I'm going to work harder, and I'm going to get further down the line in terms of where I want to go in my career. And it is that the mentally strong ones are the ones that come through, and you've got your freaks like Zam that come out of nowhere, and mental side of his game was way more, but very, very underrated of how mentally strong that boy was. People might perceive it as an arrogance, but it wasn't an arrogance. It was just a confidence of, okay, I messed that bit up, but give me the ball again and I'll show you what I can do. And the want to do it again. You don't want these boys going into their shells. And that's what today's meeting was all about for us was, yeah, it happened. Okay, we're going to move on for the next 12 days. But as a squad of 35 players for the next 12 days, we need everyone's buying in. Don't go quiet. Don't go shy. Get some smiles on your faces, chests out. Let's go out there, have a big win at home on Saturday, and then go and win a trophy and make it a double winning year for Gloucester, which hasn't happened. So it's being able to recover and do it, and sometimes just switch off from everything and say, yeah, that was shit. Okay, but I'm still here. I'm still a professional rugby player. Still got the best job in the world. Let's go again.
No. So then from a match prep point of view, you have your captain's run and a few other bits and pieces that we kind of hear about. But what would this week look like then? So we've got, Saturday fixture, following a Saturday fixture, so it's quite an unusual week,
yeah,
really, having two Saturday games.
Saturday's very, very weird actually.
But what would your week, what's this week kind of looking like? Prepping for that Newcastle game, but I guess you've already alluded to, there is always going to be a lot of thought for the following weekend. So what's your responsibilities this week? What's the makeup of your days?
Yeah, for us. So like the biggest thing for us is like we do actually get a full week training, which is good. We've been, if you're a player, you say blessed. If you're a coach, you probably say hampered by a lot of short turnarounds this year. But for us, so today is like a big learning day. So you learn from, we didn't actually watch too much footage of the Northampton game because sometimes you're just looking at stuff and think, is this relevant to the next week?
If it helps, we didn't either, to be fair, Lewis.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of stuff that is relevant this week and a lot of stuff that isn't. So the relevant stuff we reviewed and moved on, and then we sort of do skills and groundwork. So we would be our breakdown skills inside after a lower limb gym session. You'd have 3 or 4 different meetings throughout the day, and then a walkthrough of our plays for this week, and then we'd go outside and have a full training session of attack and defence run-throughs of our launches and what Newcastle's launches we think will be for next week. And then tomorrow, we have our big training day where I believe Hartbury are in again to train against them, which has been brilliant. So you get a good 15-on-15 training. Sometimes you even get 3-team, which is, be a team, our starting 15, Hartbury starting 15, and then a mixture of the other 15 all working together, so you can constantly have 2 teams working and get that fatigue and the stress under fatigue, which is why I genuinely have no doubt we'll be the fittest team in this league when it comes down to, and it's proven in the fact that we have the most collisions in the Prem, we have the most meters run in the Prem. Like we work incredibly, incredibly hard, sometimes too hard, which can, you know, be an issue. But that'll be our day off on Wednesday then. So that'll be a big recovery day where you wanna look after your body, make sure you eat well. For me, it'll be going to the pool, sauna, some form of ice bath around that. And then Thursday will be a short, sharp day. So we'll do like a powery type weight session, very short, run through our plays at full speed, full intensity. There'll be a few sort of things around if they've seen anything from Tuesday that they want us to look at again or go over. And then we used to do a captain's run on a Friday, but we found out that they probably, if the Thursday was really good, then there's no need. So we only ever do a captain's run now on a short turnaround. Because sometimes, you know what, it's like if you do something too much, you get people switching off because they think I've done this 5 times this week already. And it becomes just an extra day, an extra mental load. So Friday is then your recovery day again, where you plow a load of food into you and fuel up ready for Saturday.
You mentioned the just this is a slightly off the cuff question. Compared to the prepared ones, but you mentioned the sort of the hard work, and I think, you know, you alluded it to the beginning, the supporters, I think more than anything else, they value the effort, and you're quite right, you know, in defending the players, etc., for the effort they put in. One of the criticisms, and you would have heard it a lot, is that we don't play huge, or the perception is we don't play a lot with the ball. There's a lot of playing without the ball. Do you think that's a fair perception, or and, you know, you compare, say, I know that Northampton kick quite a bit, I know that Quinn's kick up quite a bit, but there's the perception that they do it in a different way to Gloucester, and I just kind of get your view on that, just generally, like, you know, is that something
it's quite funny actually, when at the start of the year, when everyone was saying we were kicking too much, we were actually kicking the least in the league, and just playing in the wrong areas, because, you know, we went from last year and lights coming in, and there was a huge attack focus in our preseason, and like by our own admission, we probably went away from some stuff that we were very, very good at last year and didn't combine it as well with the attack. But I think now we're definitely getting a balance of, and this is right up to sort of international rugby now, you see it with the likes of how Ireland play compared to, you know, France and England are all very different. You have to play with the ball in the right areas, otherwise the risk to reward is just so high that only certain teams like a Quinns, like a Northampton can do it. But if you analyse what Northampton have done this year, they've taken their pragmatic approach and just moved it up to the halfway line, where it used to be their 22, they were happy to run from anywhere. They moved it up to the halfway line, started kicking all the way up to the half. Now, all of a sudden, they're boys who want to attack with energy and all this sort of stuff. They're doing it from the halfway line rather than their 22. And they're not getting stopped at the halfway line. They're getting stopped in the 22, where a referee is way more likely to give you a penalty in an attacking 22 than a defending 22. So you have to add up all these perceptions, all these areas of almost like a bit of a game of chess of, let's get ourselves in the right areas, and then let's send people like Zach, Ruin, these boys that can attack, Ollie, Santi, let's get them into the 22 as quickly as and most efficiently as we can without wasting their energy. And then when we get into the 22, we spend as much time in there as possible whilst holding the ball.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Thank you. the one thing I did think about on from the weekend, and you've kind of alluded it again, there are lots of combinations again that were maybe untested, and the back row, you know, that you were part of the back row in that first half, you all pretty experienced, you know, yourself, Albert, Jack, but I don't imagine it's a back row that's played together particularly that many times.
I think it was only Sarri's where we started, and then Albert got his HIA, so he was off early.
So I mean, as from a point of view of playing, how difficult that is, that, because obviously you're maybe only training that week in that combination.
Is that
a challenge?
Yeah, it is, and especially when, you know, you have people that have sort of, you know, specialties in their game. You know, like Zach's very good at running with the ball, as is Clem. Albert's probably more of a hitter and a sort of carrier like Rue, whereas I'm more of a line out option, run around like crazy and tackle people. So it's just trying to work out how that works around balances, how that works around, you know, if we're going to attack this way, who do you want in the middle? Who do you want on the edges? And that's probably where, you know, when you're doing it for that 1 week, you have to spend a little bit more time of thinking, right, well, we want Albert carrying through the middle and I'll get on the edge and Clem can get on the edge. But then Clem's also very good in the middle as well because he's that bit bigger than myself, etc. So he can go in there and do that as well. It's just trying to work out the best balance. But yeah, when you put it together for sort of 1 week or 2 weeks, it can definitely be a bit more difficult in learning your roles compared to, you say, you know, the one that's played, which is probably me, Zach and Ruin, where you sort of, you know, your roles of what they are and what your part of the team is and where you need to deliver compared to having to sort of think about what is my role this week and how do I deliver that best for this team?
I think, have you got, you talked about the balance then and sort of the knowing your roles. Do you think there are any of the young lads coming through the academy that are quite different? I'm talking like back row specifically, kind of that potentially will supplement the likes of yourself, Zach, and give a better balance. Are there any of those players that you're really looking forward to sort of developing and coming on for maybe next season or even the season after?
I don't know. It's quite difficult to be fair, because when you know the biggest thing about making up a squad is you almost want sort of similarities. So you tend to want, you want to be able to keep playing the way you played the same. You know,
So one player swaps out for another that plays the same game.
Yeah. It's only really in the back row, I'd say the only one you'd probably want a bit different is you probably want a different eight to normal. So everyone has the, you know, the number eight that you can carry into five people and struck it up, steam it. I think you can also have the one option where they're a little bit different. They're a little bit more attacking, or they're a line out jumper or something like that. Whereas otherwise you really do want the continuity, and that's credit to him. That's where Clem's been sort of very, very good at, is he's almost adapted himself to be pretty good at all the roles. And that's to his credit. He spent a long time, you know, working around what the boys do and how they do it. And he's definitely better at some things than all of us and vice versa. So he brings that nice aspect of it. And same with Albert. Albert's now playing a bit of second row. He's doing, you know, he could be that big ball carrier. And I think as a group of five, there's always a different, you know, sort of different element from all of us if you wanted to change it. But the big thing around squads is if I was a head coach, you'd almost want to keep it pretty similar unless you wanted to throw like a curveball in and need a bit of X factor for that week, because otherwise, as you just alluded to there, you're trying to change how you play each week, and that's not the easiest thing to do.
No, and of course, then you've got people like Zach Mercer, who's just some sort of freak who couldn't do weird things that no one else can do.
A back wearing a number eight jersey, and you know that's great for us in terms of how we play attacking rugby. He is definitely very different at that, and well, one of a kind. You don't see anyone else doing it, do you, from a number eight position, and he makes it look very easy at times, and I wish I could do some of the things that you could do.
I think we all wish we could do stuff that Zach Mercer could do. I mean, kicking, and we both played in the backs, and neither of us can kick like he can. So that's
he's got it all.
He's got it all. Right, we're going to move on to some quick fire questions. Thank you so much for going through all those. You know, there's quite a lot of heavy duty stuff.
Hopefully,
there
it sort of explains it a little bit and understands a little bit. Hopefully.
Yeah, I'm sure it will do. But we'll move on to some quick fire questions. These are hopefully a little bit more fun. He says. From your point of view, what's the best thing about being a Gloucester player that you probably wouldn't have immediately realised back in the day?
It's going to sound weird after this week, but it is the fans. and I always say
they're not what you expected.
They're not quite what you expected. They're better on the good days and worse on the bad days than you can ever expect.
Yes.
And everything in between is a great day. So I would genuinely say the fans, because I forever get messages of congratulations or we thank you for this, we thank you for that. And I will never, ever get tired of that. And I genuinely think that that'll be the one thing that when I retire, and what I try and always say to people that move to the club, especially people from outside of the country, is embrace it, because it is like nothing else.
Jim, do you want to do the next one?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, you've been captain a while now. How has that changed you, maybe more so changed the way you are off the pitch? You know, what's it done for you?
You're a lot more pragmatic. You understand a bit more around stuff. You speak to the boss a lot more, so you understand things that's going through his head. You understand things that if he's had to, you know, have a difficult conversation with somebody, you tend to get informed about that because obviously you're the player side of it. So you try and help as much as you can. And the big one for me was learning how to get the best out of people. And I think towards the last sort of 12 months, I'll be pretty confident in saying around this squad, I know how to get the best out of most people. And that is hugely different. Don't get me wrong. There are people that you can bark at, shout at, give a kick up the arse to, and they'll get your best out of them. There's other lads that you need to put, and they're not who you think they are. The lads who need a shoulder around them, need telling how good they are. Yeah, even though they, you know, the outside world would think they're brilliant, the most, you know, but like quite insecure, needing constant reassurance. And for me, it was getting the balance of that because I was always a very direct individual of, this is how we do it. This is what I'm going to do. We're all going to work our nuts off. And let's just go down that route. That doesn't work for everyone. If it did, life would be a lot simpler in my eyes, but it doesn't. So for me, it was learning how to get the best out of each individual, and especially younger lads, because lads that are 18, 19 now are a whole different understanding of emotional level. And it's been good. I think it's helped me grow a little bit to understand that. And it's made me a better player, definitely.
No, I definitely get the feeling that that's how you captain. I think you know, that's one of your huge, huge pluses. Do you tend to be the first person there and the last person to leave, and put in? I get the feeling you put in twice as many hours as anyone else in the squad.
I try to. Yeah, I'm definitely always the first in. So I get in the ice bath at about 6:45, and then I'm normally one of the last out there because I'm old, so I have to get in the physio room and get that sorted, or there'll be something around lineouts that I want to look at, or you just tend to. The other thing is you want to give a good example. Like you see these young boys coming through, they see me rocking up just before breakfast or leaving as soon as the training's done. It's, you know, how do they think that's professionalism? You know, I grew up around people like Johnny Meg and Billy 12 Trees who were always down that route. You Tom Savages of the world, that the more you put into this game, the more you get out of it. And that I firmly believe, because I didn't start properly playing my best rugby until I started recovering properly. Still, I started really thinking about my food and what I do. And there's a reason, it probably sounds a little bit arrogant here, but I'm not. There's a reason that I can play 28 to 34 games a year and other people don't, is I really, really tried my best to take care of myself and make it a thing where, you know, we won't go out on certain days. My missus will be like, we need to do this. No, I'm not taking the little one out on a horse. I'm not taking this for a walk. I'm not doing this, because you have to be a little bit selfish. But if that's what's good for the team, in my head, that's what's right. And that will always be how I work until the day I retire.
I remember Bradley Wiggins refusing to take the shopping out the boot of his car because the Tour de France was coming up. So
there's certain times. Like, so yeah. There's 12 days left. Don't expect me to do anything for the next 12 days other than rugby, recover and eat. Job done.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of the various excuses I can come up with to get
You've got
away
no
with.
Excuses available. No, sorry.
No, I'm a bit fucking there. In terms of your, like, a couple of real quick ones here, your favourite moment as a rugby player. Now, that doesn't have to be Gloucester. I mean, it could be anything, really.
There's a few that are up there. Winning the Ace League with Hartbury was a big one for us, because everyone had won it before us. So you're under a huge amount of pressure at 18. And then the two recent ones were Bath 64-0. That was probably my best ever day in terms of a feeling of a group, and then the Prem Cup win. Mm-hmm. You know, I was desperate to win a trophy for Gloucester. Now desperate to add more to it, because that feeling was something that I will never ever forget.
And where would you rank your, you know, you're one of very few players to immediately captain the England side. on your debut.
Yeah, it was surreal. Would be the one. Like, I think it's something that it's whenever you speak about it, I always think that yeah, I did. Yeah, because to me, it was just it was in, it was done. It was, you know, you're in out. It's one of those things. It was just sort of thrust upon you and didn't really have time to think about it. And I think it was, I always, like, whenever I get asked this sort of question is, you know, when you sit back and reflect on it, that you're one of five people to do that, it's not something a huge amount of people have done. And I think that'd be one of those that when the boots finally get hung up, it'll be a very nice thing to sit back on. I think, yeah, that was a hugely proud day.
Yeah.
I think it'll be a pub quiz question going forward. Yeah. You know, what Gloucester captain also...
Hopefully, so question sport, something like that. I'll be very happy with that if I manage to go on question of sport.
yeah. Well, that I think if we can like add in a few extra trophies as well, that'd be even better.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah. The hardest hit you've ever had, you've ever been on the end of. I could probably say the biggest one I've seen you hit was the ladder against Cardiff in Bilbao. But what's the one you've experienced?
I don't tend to tackle that much. Jordy Reid got me in training once in a live game, and that sent shivers through me. That bloke had a rod up his back, and I from that moment on, it was like, right, stay away. He's dangerous. And obviously, you guys have seen it many times during a game. He knew how to hit that bloke.
And the best player you've played with and against?
Best player I played with, like Zan would be up there in terms of freakish ability on a rugby pitch is something that you just don't see it like very often at all. In terms of like rugby knowledge, etc., then there's a few, to be fair. We've had some very good players at Gloucester over the years, as you guys have known, but yeah, I'd say Zam-ish in terms of ability is like no other. And then against, we played, do you remember the Bar Bars game? Did you guys come to the Bar Bars game with us fully loaded? Yeah. Like the chance to have ever played against Ali Surveyor, like he wasn't probably where he is now then, but the fact that you say you've played against him now, and, you know, they had the Barrett brothers, they had the Matt Field and Bofa in the second row. You could name any of them as the greatest players you've ever played against, because that was just of superstars, really.
Yeah, we always felt sorry a little bit for Steph Reynolds because he was up against Nandolo, I think, if my memory serves.
Yeah, Nandolo, right. Yeah.
That was actually borderline torture. I don't think that was ever fair.
It was when they rocked up and you thought, nah, this can't be the right. Oh, it is. They are playing this team. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it was a little bit different to the Barbos game earlier in the year, but it was a slightly different one. And the final one, and see if you can guess who decided this question was going to get in. At a push, do you think you could source Taylor Swift tickets via Luis Rees-Sammet?
You'd be amazed at how many times this question has been asked.
I would have thought a lot.
By your wife?
The answer is a definite no. I did speak to him yesterday, actually, because I saw a video of him on Instagram catching balls, and he looks good out there. Like
is that the one where he rugby passed it back?
No, there's another one who's actually in NFL shape doing it, and you're like, wow, he does look like he belongs there. So, yeah, Taylor Swift could be a bit of a push, but... He'll definitely be, he'll be there. I guarantee it.
Yeah, I mean, to be
fair, should you and the guys keep up, keep in contact with, with not just Sam, but you know, other ex players that have moved on. Do you still keep in touch, kind of regularly?
Yeah, try to as much as possible. Obviously, you have your friendship groups, and as I'm sure in most businesses, there's people you'd rather spend time with and people you don't. But then. If boys leave and you know you get on with them, there's always that contacts. You know, I speak to the likes of Ross still quite a lot, even like Motu, that they were together in Bree for a long time, and it was always good catching up with those two. But there's plenty of players. To be honest with you, by the end of your career, there's so many players you've played with. You'd get into the hundreds. If you tried to keep up with all of them one by one, you'd never have enough time to do anything else.
I think the one thing we forget, and you know. We are, in the nicest possible way, we're the idiots who'll and we may be using your word there, but we're really idiots who turn up every week and are there for year after year after year. But you guys do have, generally, I mean, Lewis, yourself are one of a, you know, becoming a rarer kind of person in terms of rugby, where you're with the same club for a long period of time. But a lot of the careers within the clubs are quite transient, and therefore you are meeting people, becoming friends with people, you have connections with people. Is there somebody that you think you, if you could keep one player that we maybe have lost? And Zam, we can't say Zam because everyone says Zamit. But if there's one player that you think, you know what, we could have done with them maybe for another couple of years. Is there someone that sort of sticks in your mind?
There's a couple, to be fair. I'd love to have kept Tom Savage, just because I got on really well with him as a friend, and he was always a hell of a player that gave a lot to the shirt, and he probably went, you know, under the radar and that sort of stuff. Billy Burns would have been another one. I was gutted when he went. I felt like he would have been long term goal, a brilliant 10. Probably still would have been here now, and you know, we'd have been on similar appearances and caps. That you could name a few, but those would be two of the big ones for me that I think would have continually gone well at the club under all the coaches we'd have had. I think those two would have stuck at it and gone really well.
I think that will probably do it for the moment, Lewis. I really do appreciate, and we will appreciate. Thank you so much for coming on. Now, obviously, we're all going to draw a line off under Saturday. Well, let's hope for a positive result on this Saturday coming. Finish the season off with a win in the league, and then obviously, you know, the hordes of Cherry and White headed down to Tottenham on the 24th. Regardless of what maybe some people's perceptions about what we think or what other fans think, we all want you to win on that Friday night. We all want to see you lift another trophy. I think we become the first team to win it 3 times, or I think that's right, isn't it? Little bit of history. So best of luck.
Thank you very much.
And you know, let's bring home another trophy.
Cheers. Perfect. Nice one.
Cheers.